It's Marketplace Tech for October 27th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. For a long time, graphic designers, artists, and other creative workers have stuck to one company, Apple. Microsoft has had its eye on that part of the market, and we headed to a Microsoft event in Manhattan this week, where the tech giant released a new PC called the Surface Studio, a $300 virtual reality headset, and a bunch of software for creatives, all based on this philosophy from CEO Satya Nadella.
Next 10 years will be defined by technology that empowers profound creation.
Hence, a bunch of new hardware and software for creators, including a lot of touch-sensitive stuff on that Surface Studio computer, demonstrated by Microsoft's VP for Windows and Devices, Youssef Mehdi.
If I see something I just want to get rid of, just get rid of it. If you want to strike out a word here, no problem. And so that is just so much more intuitive. It's how you work in real life.
That Surface Studio will be around for the holiday and more widely available in early 2017. As we continue our tech and voting series this week, we wanted to talk to a company with more voters on its platform than maybe any other in the U.S. Yep, Facebook. The company has sent people registration reminders, helped them view candidates' stances on issues, and more. Katie Harbath used to work for the Republican National Committee. Now she's the director of government and politics for Facebook. Katie, thanks for joining us. Did that voter registration reminder function make a difference?
We estimate that we think between the primaries and the general election that we've helped register about 2 million voters.
Do you think it's possible that getting out the vote is a partisan effort?
We see it as something that is helping everybody to become a much more informed citizen and make sure they know, you know, that they need to be registered, how they can find that registration. And on Facebook, we have an equal number of people who self-identify as liberal or conservative. And so we see this as just a good public service effort for us to help people to become voters and to make sure their voice is heard on Election Day.
What about more generally using Facebook as a tool to inform voters? I mean, you say that it's a public good. When and how did Facebook decide that these things are appropriate uses of, you know, the reach of the platform?
You know, it all goes back to our core mission of making the world more open and connected. And one of those things is helping people to get connected to those people that that might represent them or do represent them. Not just have that voice on Election Day, but, you know, also be able to connect with these representatives and to continue to talk to them as they start actually working on legislation and issues is something that we're uniquely situated to do.
There have been several studies that have come out suggesting that social media actually hardens people's political views, does not inspire actual dialogue across the aisle. Do you think that's true?
I don't think that that is particularly true, and for a couple of reasons. One is we released some research last May that looked at the information people were getting on Facebook, and we saw that they really were getting a diverse set of viewpoints. And when you think about it, you know, the people that you're friends and family with in real life, they don't all agree and believe the exact same things. And because Facebook's a place where you connect with them, but just in an online format, that doesn't mean that you're only going to be seeing viewpoints that you agree with.
Katie Harbath, she is Director of Government and Politics for Facebook. Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
By the way, Facebook is far from the only tech company trying to get voters matched with the right candidate by providing information on the issues. Dating app Tinder is reviving the Swipe the Vote poll. Users can swipe their feelings on certain issues, left for bad, right for good, and then get matched with a candidate who agrees the most. Some of us wish we could swipe left on the whole election cycle right now. The long-running battle between Airbnb and the state of New York is escalating. The state government put forth a restriction in recent days that says you could be fined $7,500 for listing a rental that is less than 30 days long. Airbnb has filed suit against that restriction. The battle involves the state's hotel lobby and arguments that Airbnb raises rent prices, a tech startup valued in the tens of billions of dollars, and people trying to use that company to make an extra buck. Arun Sundararajan is at NYU's Stern School of Business. For what it's worth, he is not tied to Airbnb in any commercial way. But Arun, do you think this restriction goes in the wrong direction?
we're mixing up what is a serious issue, which is a lack of affordable housing in New York, with Airbnb hosting, where there's really no evidence that Airbnb hosting has any impact that is measurable on the supply of short-term rentals.
That's interesting. So can you talk a little bit more about that data? What do we know about the availability of housing and Airbnb's impact on it?
Airbnb right now is still such a small fraction of the market. I mean, there are 2 million apartments in New York City. There are at best like 45 or 50,000 Airbnb hosts, only a fraction of whom are renting out, you know, their entire apartment. So it's a very small effect, if there is any effect at all.
Critics of Airbnb say that short-term rentals drive up housing costs, but lots of people living in the city are just trying to make money, right, in a city that is very expensive. So is there a way for everyone to win here?
What we need to do is come up with legislation that is inclusive of Airbnb while also taking into account the needs of communities and the impacts that we might have on long-term rental prices. The elements of regulation that are going to be effective are, one, to make sure that people don't list multiple properties on the Airbnb site. Second, to make sure that owners are actually living in the units that they are listing. And third, to delegate a lot of the enforcement of the regulations to Airbnb, making them a partner.
Arun Sundararajan, he is a professor at NYU's Stern School of Business. He's also the author of The Sharing Economy, The End of Employment and the Rise of Crowd-Based Capitalism. Arun, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ben.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.